Accession number 30653, Joan King, Reel 4. Now, so what else did you do? Tell us about the skating rinks then.
I went roller skating.
It was roller skating, was it? Not
yeah.
Ice skating.
At first, and then after I got used to that, then we decided ice skating. I went dancing. Never done such a thing before. And it was absolutely marvellous.
Did you drink at all? Did you go to
pubs? No,
you didn't drink, right?
We grew up in an absolutely dry household and never heard of drink. Always knew where to get a cup of coffee. Always knew where to get something to eat wherever I went. And to this day, I don't drink.
Now, so what happened next then?
Well, I stayed there and then everything quietened down. That's it. And I came home.
And that's after the war finished?
No, that was when it quietened down. That's where I got mixed up. Now, I came home, but I did go back in a factory.
You did or you didn't?
No.
So what happened when you got back to
Never
London?
Never went in a factory since.
So what did you do when you got back to London?
Well, I went to the Labour Exchange, asked them for a job, said I didn't want to go in a factory. And one of my sisters was a waitress. I said I'd be a waitress. So she gave me a little green ticket to go over and get a job in the Strand.
And the war's still on?
Yeah.
Right.
And don't forget, to go over the West End, nobody ever went over the West End, only to work. It was a place that parents didn't want their kids to go, especially their girls. We knew nothing about it, but we did. But I went over there after a job. And I got there, and I was still very green, because we were very young for our age. And I was walking down the Strand, looking for this place. A policewoman came up to me, spoke to me, and said, would I go with her? Well, at the end of the Strand, opposite Trafalgar Square, on the left there, there was a little box, not unlike a Doctor Who box. Well, she took me in there. And I followed her, because we was used to doing everything we were told. We weren't all that old. I was a bit of a young... And she only wanted to ask me what I was doing there. Showed him a card, the introduction to the job, and she pointed out where it was. She was only looking after me, really, because I suppose I looked as green as I was, looking all round, and it was packed tight with service. Anyway, the thing was that when she spoke to me and I walked along the Strand with her, I was the proudest person on earth. I was so proud that she spoke to me and that she was walking along by the side of me. She was the first policeman of any kind that ever spoke to me. And I was so proud of that. And she had her uniform on. Anyway, that's where I worked.
What you got the job as a waitress then?
Yeah, I can't remember. It wasn't Lyons. It was another one that was well
and
known.
What was it like? What was the work like as a waitress?
Well, I know I was learning, and I know I had a tray on my hand unloading it. And of course, I had the sense to unload the front stuff first. And a bowl of soup went plonk right in the fella's lap. I do know that. And he was very nice. Don't worry, you know, and all the rest of it. But I was working along the Strand in their other place on the other side of the road when peace was declared. It just happened to be... Halfway along in all this, I'd stopped reading newspapers, so listening to the wireless. I couldn't stand any more of war, so I turned me back on it. I just wouldn't read another newspaper. I'd stopped reading books because of that woman in the library. I could not read another paper.
Why was it so upsetting to you? Because nothing.
It was terrible.
Why? Because what had happened? I mean...
Well, it was absolutely terrible, the utter misery of it. That's what I noticed. You'd have people at your youth club one minute, they're on con. You'd see all where we lived, there was lots of young women, all their husbands were fighting away. And the misery of when a telegram boy knocked at the door, you knew it wasn't good news. And the absolute misery... And those young women, they all used to sit along the front and knit and drink tea in the summer. They were, you know, that's what they did. And the misery and the anguish amongst them all, that this one's husband was in the East, this one's husband was there, and the misery and the people were just such, it was so hard, even to people not getting enough to eat, always anguished. It was misery, misery, misery. I couldn't take it anymore. I stopped reading newspapers and I stopped listening to the wireless.
Now, what about VE Day then? What do you remember about that?
Well, the oddest thing is, I was up in the restroom, because you had a restroom upstairs where, when you had your breaks, you went up there, and I happened to look out the window, saw all these people, all gay and everything else, packed tight, and they were saying the war ended. And I just thought, oh, thank goodness for that. And I was so glad it didn't affect me in any other way. I was so pleased that the war had ended. I mean, I didn't have any brothers to go to war, but a lot of those people did, and the young men along the street went to war, didn't come back. My sister Dolly was married to a fellow who was in the Air Force. We'd know it. She'd known him before the war. We knew the family well. And his brother Paddy called with his girlfriend, and he went and he never came back. He was always witnessing where people, my mum's youngest brother, she had seven brothers, all went off in the war, and the youngest one was an observer in the Air Force. He came back, and it was the utter sheer misery. You never, don't forget, you had no lightener at all. Utterly, utterly miserable.
Now, were there any celebrations you saw or took part in on VE Day?
Yeah, everyone was dancing and singing and everything else. And when I went home, my sister said, let's go over the other side. And where did we go? Outside Buckingham Palace, because that's where everyone went. And
what do you remember about it? What was it like?
Oh, it was absolutely marvellous that the war had finished. All that misery and all that suffering, it was so terrible. I mean, people, as they walked about, don't forget, they all had people fighting and everything else, and you could, it showed on them. They couldn't live ordinary when all that was going on. I stopped reading papers.
Now, so what happened then? You carried on working there? Could you be going to be called up fairly soon afterwards, weren't you?
Well, no, I wasn't old enough. I was waiting to become old enough. I wanted to go in the Land Army.
Why?
Well, because I like the fresh air, and I thought I'd like to work on the land. And it was all for the good of the war effort. And, of course, I wasn't old enough. All the way through, I was waiting to... On the guns, I wanted to go at first. The guns. Because, I mean... when all that bombing and that first started, well, we didn't have anything anyway to fight back with. My mum used to say, where's our planes? Where's our planes? Of course, they weren't there, were they? They didn't have them.
So tell me about the call-up thing, because that was going to happen when you were 18, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's in November, that's 6 months after the end of the war.
Yeah, so, that's right.
So what was going to happen? Did you think you'd be still called up, or...?
Well, still go. I wouldn't have to go. Like, I would have had to have gone in something during the war. I'd have had to have gone on something. My sister went on the buses. And the times that her bus drove off with her left behind, because there'd be a bad raid and they'd get off for a minute and the driver would go without her. I would have had to have done something. So I thought, I'll go in the Land Army. Well, actually, I did get a letter from them when we, I applied as we birthday, got a letter from them to go for an interview. And I went right over the other side, along Oxford Street. It was in like a little, like you say, a little caravan-y thing. It wasn't a permanent building. It was, guess what? I went there, big day, you know, all now I can come. And I'd got the date wrong. It was a month later. And I never went back. I tell you what, I didn't mention when the war was on, when those raids were on, what used to happen. Us kids used to go around the streets collecting shrapnel.
Yeah. So what happened next then?
Well, nothing. I just got one job after another. Because don't forget, I wasn't educated, so I couldn't do a job that would have interested me. I hadn't had the education.
Now, I thought were you not called up to work for the NAFI? You weren't called up at all?
No, that was after the war. I was wondering Robert mentioned that. Because it was after the war. Actually, I wasn't called up at all. But we had a merry time. The war was finished. So as far as we was concerned, everything in the garden was beautiful. Life was marvellous. It didn't matter what you were doing, what you weren't. As far as I was concerned, everything was lovely. There couldn't be anything to be miserable about. Now no one was being killed, no one was being wounded and being killed. So as far as I was concerned, I was at peace with the world. And I got a bit better jobs. I went as a waitress again. I got jobs in better places, you know what I mean. I went in Scots, that was the top place. After you worked there, you could get a job anywhere. But then I worked in the Oxford and Cambridge Club. Waitress, wine waitress. And it was quite nice, I went to nice places. My friend came, we used to meet each other, not all the time. She came from Wembley, she'd phone up and say, I'll meet you. What was those milk bars called? Women didn't go in pubs then, you met in milk bars or cafes or restaurants. It wasn't the thing for women on their own, or I didn't know of any. I only ever knew of one girl that went in pubs, and that was because her family had always gone to pubs. So she met me, said, "Here, Joan," her father had been a sergeant major during the war. She said, we tried to get jobs that we could travel, right? We couldn't find any anywhere. You couldn't travel anywhere. So she said, shall we join NAFI? Well, I didn't know what NAFI was. I didn't know. I said, well, what is it? She said, well, you make tea and that for the forces. So she was 6 months too young. So I waited 6 months for her to be 6 months. Gave me notice in at my job. Was ready to go. And she came over to see me during the week following and said she changed her mind. Didn't make no difference to me, I didn't mind.
So when did you work for the NAFI then?
Well, I went for NAFI then. I went to the Purbright. I think I had to be six.
What year was it you went to work for the NAFI then?
I should say within the year after. That's it, she wasn't 18. She had to wait till she was 18. So, and I was just already 18.
So 1946.
Just 18. She was 18 in the May. Well, time came round that she could come. She changed her mind the last week. So I went to Purbright. I thought I liked being in the country. But it nearly drove me mad, the quietness of it. I only joined to travel. And they said, when you'd been in it 6 months, you'd go to Germany. So I bought myself a bike down there. I also started to smoke with the pure misery of the boredom of it.
So tell me what your work was. What did you do for the NAFI at Perth?
Well, you made tea in that. It's a canteen, forces canteen. I went to Purbright where all the guards were.
And what was it like?
Well,
what do you remember? What was a typical day's work like for you in the NAFI?
Well, you had to get up in the morning. And you had to open the canteen round about 10-ish, I suppose, till after till about 2 or 3. And then you had a few hours off in the afternoon, and you were back in the evening. But one day a week you had off, and this went on for 7 days, one day a week you had off, and one day a week you had to get up early in the morning to light the fires. And I suffered it. And counted every day to when I was done enough time, it's like being to go abroad. All I wanted to do was travel.
And so Did you go to Germany?
Yeah. When the 6 months was up to the day that they said you had to do in England to go abroad, the next day off I went up to the Nappies office and said, look, I've done 6 months. And they gave me a notification that I was going to Germany.
Whereabouts in Germany did you go?
I landed up at Hamburg. I went to the transit camp first. I went from somewhere in Yorkshire, Hull or somewhere, over to the Hook of Holland.
Now, you were a civilian, weren't you?
Yeah.
So what was it like in Hamburg? Was it just the same, or how do you find it there?
Oh, it didn't strike me as bad luck it did over here, because I wasn't there. You know, I hadn't suffered it. But they'd had a hammering. In fact, I went on a journey by a train at one time, and it was quite a way away, and for miles around, as far as you could see, it was flat. Because that didn't affect me as it did seeing it in England. Of course it didn't. We was all right there. We wore a uniform. We weren't with the army, but we wore a uniform. We were attached to forces, as they told us before we went, for our own protection. Right? And German personnel on the trains, they weren't allowed to go in the Allied personnel carriages. And I was in the Victory Club. Do you know Germany at all? Huge building, about the length, at least the length of those houses over there, and going three times back. Huge place.
That's where you worked, was it? The Victory
Club?
Yeah,
I was in the Victory Club. Yeah, a huge place. And
what was the Victory Club like? Give us a description of it, a bit more.
Well, yeah, I told you, it was, see the length of that block of houses there? Look at that.
They can't see that.
Three times, huge place. Can't you guess how big it would be and put it down?
It's just very large. What
at
was it
the
like
bottom,
inside?
There was a beer tavern, huge place, massive. You could fit about at least six pubs into the space.
That gives us the idea, yeah.
Yeah. Then above that was the canteen, right above it.
And did you work in the canteen part, not in the pub part?
No. And then above that was the lounges section, all lounges for the forces to lounge about in chairs and writing desks and all that. We were on the sixth floor.
And what were you doing?
Well, we changed over a bit. First of all, and at the back, on its own, down a slope, was the bakery. Because don't forget that, to make everything, because Germany had no food. Couldn't buy it. First of all, I was in the bakery, and what our job was to be on the alert the whole time. A, because everything that moved got nicked, if it was possible. Don't forget they were starving. They weren't pinching, really. They were kind of getting food. And that was our job, to keep our eyes open. And also, we wrote out the list, say, so many cakes for this canteen and so many buns and all that. Well, I was down there for a while, and actually they did ask me if I wanted to take over the canteen, take it over. But I said no. I don't know why, but I said no. And the next thing was I worked in the beer tavern, where you sat in a glass box with a little section open, and as they came up and got their beer, they paid you and went along, right? One day, I had an incident while I was there. I was in the dance hall, they had a dance hall between the, over the canteen, between the canteen and the lounge floor, there was a big dance hall. Well, you imagine there weren't enough girls to go round. And I used to feel sorry for all the fellas that didn't have no one to dance with. Anyway, I've always felt sorry for everybody and everything. I think that's been my drawback, really. Anyway, I know this fellow had asked me, I was already dancing with someone. I'd already told them. But anyway, that was that. But that was the end of that. But one day, I happened to be upstairs in our quarters, and this fella came barging up the stairs looking for me. And I had a nickname. They called me Dizzy because I was very light-hearted. Well, I felt light-hearted because the war was over. Nothing could touch me after that orphanage. Because as far as I was concerned, the war was over, so everything was good. And I was in the kitchen, and this Scots girl was getting nearer. She'd me in a cupboard. Right?
She what?
She hid me in a cupboard. Of course, he was so wild, I don't know who he was, didn't even know his name. He was so wild that when he left, the staircase went down and down through the floors because there was a lift up the public, but this is leading to our village, and he picked someone up and chucked them right, well, just in his, perhaps he'd had a drink, eh?
And was the person killed or?
No, they were badly injured. Of course, he got done for it. Through the army, like, went inside. But then I was sitting down this beer tavern one day, doing my job, and who should walk up? He'd come out, and he was walking up the front because I was at the centre, shooting a gun up the air, coming right towards me. Go on, what did I do? I was only a young girl, wouldn't have done any different now. Flew for my life, didn't I? Left everything there, ran up to the office, and the first things they said to me was, you have no right to live. You should be guarding that. Well, I didn't work there to be a double much more after that. I went into the stores, and same thing, you had to keep your eyes open, keep an eye on all the stores, all that kind of thing, and keep a check. You just didn't do nothing. And then after that, I went round the beer tavern, down the BFN.
The what?
That was a lovely little job round there, the British Pulses Network,
what
in
you
their
doing
canteen. It was the building, you know, those people that gave out records and that, you know. What was it? They played records for the people at home. The Pulses would pick them, like they'd say, this is from whoever it was, to their people there. Pulses Network.
And what was it like in the canteen there? You liked
it? Oh, it was nice. Well, it was only a nice little neat canteen. And they were all nice people. And I just one day went round to the Victory Club and picked out a girl that worked in the restaurant and said, you come round and work with me. And she did. So I had a nice girl working with me. And it was quite nice there. You know, everybody was quite nice. But the one thing about the German people, we thought it wasn't that they had food shortage there, they didn't have any at all. And they used to give them all a bowl of soup every day, that was their main meal. So, of course, you couldn't blame them. You know what I mean? And it was our job to make sure that the stuff didn't go, even the coffee grouts that had been used and the tea grouts they'd take home to use, they were really in a bad way.
So how long were you there for?
I don't know. You work that, you can work it out better than me. I was there, I had a couple of birthdays there.
So till about 1948 then?
48, yeah, that'd be about it.
And why did you leave?
Well, I'd put my name down to go to the Middle East or the Far East. They wanted volunteers and I was going. But when I came home, my mum had been ill and I just felt that I couldn't keep going and leaving her to, you know, take the load. So I just didn't go back. But I really...
So you left the canteen?
Yeah, I really miss Nappy a lot being out there. I miss the being abroad and all that kind of thing, but I've always felt sorry for people, so I felt sorry for her. Felt that she needed a bit of assistance. Because don't forget, all the way through your life, you was good to your mother, because you knew that she didn't have a lot, so every way you turned, I mean, you always kind of was handed out a bit, you know, to, and that was it. I felt, so, I was always feeling sorry for people.
Thank you very much.